Hello and welcome to Audionautic Deep Space Network, episode 98. This is the Independent Musician's Guide to Production and Promotion. This week, we're talking DAW setups, how to get started with one, what are the pros and cons, and finally, why it's still worth it in 2024, at least in someone's opinion, let's put it that way. Maybe one of the three here, I don't know. We've also got an update from Korg on the NTS-1 synth, the Mark II now, which is... Well, I don't have the Mark II, but I have the Mark I. And if you watch the show, you know, I often just point it up, but rarely use it. But it's an awesome synth, and the Mark II looks incredible. So we'll take a look at that. And then we've got some news from the EU regarding royalty reform. And finally, in the round robin, we'll discuss perfectionism in production and some ways to deal with it. So thanks to everyone who's joining us live, and much love to all of our patrons who help support what we do and allow us to do this week in and week out. My name is Sunwarper, and with me today are Eon Lake and Curtis.
Eon Lake and I got the memo for the clothing companion today. It looks like we've got one outlier.
Yeah, I'm on the West Coast, so I went blue. The California, you know, I'm in California, so I got to go blue. You guys are, you know, well across the pond, let's put it. So
we got to stay warm. We got to stay warm.
Yeah, I say that I'm in a jacket, but I'm also in sandals, so I'm true to Californian sensibilities.
These aren't gang colors. We're all good here. Everybody's friends, you know. No
beef. Exactly what we're going to do. Well, we're going to get straight into it. Hello to everyone in the chat. Wonderful. Thank you ever so much for joining us. We're going to go straight into it. And we're going to start with Korg today because there is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful NTS-1 Mark II that is out into the world that Sunwarper dropped into the docket. As he has already stated, he very much loves this. I wouldn't mind this little bit. And people are calling it a stocking filler. And I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's very fair. I think it kind of derails it somewhat. Do you want to watch the video first and see it, or should I go through what it is first?
Let's watch the video first. But to give a little preamble, whatever you want to call it, the original NTS-1, I think it's, Eon, like you can correct me, I think it was only $100. And you have to build it.
Yeah.
And by build it, it's very simple. Like you put things together and you fold it up and put little tiny screws in and then it's good to go. So it's a fun little project, but it's not really DIY or anything, but it is fun to do. But it's a really powerful synth, but even better than just the synth. And I believe this is also the added oscillator that's in the Minilog XD, the little upgraded Minilog, but it comes with an audio in. So all the built-in effects, which are nuts, like crazy audio effects in here, can go. You could put guitar in here. You could put anything. A lot of fun. That's it. And then they just did this big update. So let's take a look at it.
Yeah. If I come back, I'll get one of my many tabs open. If I full screen this, you can have a look. This is how beautiful it looks. I love the new overlay before we get into it. And I've just got a little thing here that you can do. They've got the effects box. They've updated the effects box. So I'm going to focus on that for now. Let me get rid of the overlay for the new so you can see it in full. Let's go for it.
8 effects options, and all new to the Korg NTS-1 Mark II are some fantastic distortion models. Soft clip. A hard clip model. A sine fold model. And a fuzz model.
Oh, yeah. That's the one.
I really like using the distortion with high resonance, get a nice acid squelch.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, yeah, very much so. I'll go through a bit of it and then we can kind of throw it out to everyone. So this is the NTS-1 Mark II. Apparently, it's an improved synthesizer with a better interface, stronger processor, and more options for customization as well. Multi-touch keyboard, so it's not so much mono anymore. An 8-stage sequencer for creating music with MIDI capabilities. It's got a more powerful engine with sound and effects, which includes different oscillators and modulation possibilities. And now, for the first time, you can connect instrumentation through it using MIDI, and it also has a USB power option as well. Sorry, say that again, Sunwarper?
Just yes. I love that they're adding all these features. Yeah.
Very much so.
I wish, is it audio through USB-C? It doesn't seem like it from the docket.
I'd have to have a double check.
We'll have to check.
Have a look here now. But from what I saw, there was a lot more going through on the back panel. The back panel was very much before. If we have a look, and if I bring this up, maybe I can see it from here. But there's a lot more going through it. And yes, hang on. Let me just share my screen very quickly so you can see this here. So we've got MIDI out and in. Obviously, you've got USB-C. We've got air in and out sync. And we've got audio in as well through a little mini jack there. Does that answer your question, Samoppa?
A little bit. I'm wondering, though, because like on the old one, it's just the old school USB. That one's USB-C. Mm-hmm. And like with the SP404, you can do power and audio through the USB-C all at once, like at the same time. So I'm curious. Maybe not. I mean, have they changed the price at all on this one? Do you see? Did they give a price?
Not yet, because it's not been released yet.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So the original is pretty cheap, and part of why it's cheap is because you have to build it. Which Smiling Error says you pay to make it for them. Which I mean, but that's kind of why you get it. It's like a DIY project in a sense, and it is a very low price for what you get. So I think that's kind of part of why. Love that. Yeah, a lot of people do like that. Like it's kind of like a build your own Lego, but with synthesizers or something. So yeah.
Different with strokes, Eurorack modules, you know, there's some people like to build them and solder all the bits in themselves. Not me, but it's popular. Go figure.
Yeah. And Ross says, not sure, not clear what the USB is doing though. Yeah. So basically, it sounds like for sure it gets power, right? So it's going to receive, you can power the unit with the USB. What I'm curious about, and it's not saying it, is whether it can also, with that, transmit audio, because audio over USB-C is crazy. The the Digitech can do it with Overbridge, but the SP404 and some other new machines and stuff can do audio and power at the same time. So you could connect your computer to, like, let's say the SP404 with just one cable, and that's the only thing that you need in the SP404. You don't need any other cables, whatever, and it just sends audio and it's powered all at once. So it'd be cool if we start seeing more machines that can do that, because it just reduces the mess, reduces the cables. And then if you want to be more portable, you can bring like a laptop and a NTS1 or a laptop in the 404. You know, you just get much, you need less, which is nice.
Yeah, and there should be a class compliant way of doing at least two channel audio over USB.
Yeah, that would be nice to see more and more. We got Bendu in the chat. Bendu says, hello, what's going on, Bendu? How are you? Good to see you. Jan, like, do you have any thoughts on the NTS1? Don't you have one?
Yeah, you can give me one if you like. I like the look of it. I'll take one. Thanks.
Okay. Do you have an old one, though? I could have sworn
One. I've got the old Korg little Monitron thing. Hello.
That's right. That's the one I have. Yeah, the blue one. We were talking about this last week.
Fella. Yeah, and I have one thing through it, and you can make it screech quite nicely. It does a lovely screech on it.
Oh, and Lars, there is no, you don't have to do any of that. It's all you have to do is put it together and put some screws together. That's it. It's super
it's
easy.
It's not even soldering.
Because I can't I can't do anything mildly technical in that way. And I was like, oh good, I can actually build this one and feel like I can do something. But it sounds really good too. The only issue, the keyboard is on the original, the keyboard is lacking, but this new one might be a little better. They've changed it around. And it's got MIDI. This one does have MIDI. Has MIDI in, yeah.
But, full hammer action, 88 key USB keyboard.
But it is monophonic.
You say that so, like it's a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing. But if you're putting an 88 key keyboard, you can just go
one and play with one finger.
Yeah, but you can do it. Yeah, yeah. Lars says, "Wait, what? Then why is it even a kit?" I don't know, but it's fun to do. It took like 10 minutes to build, and it's more. I believe it's cheaper because of the bill. I could be wrong. As Curtis says, capitalism is why. Yeah, who knows? But
think of it more like a Kinder Surprise thing or something like that.
I like it. I think it kind of I was looking at the NTS. Well, obviously it's one of those kind of classic stocking fillers that you kind of every producer or musician who's into synthesis kind of toys with around about Christmas time and birthdays and stuff like that. And I've never really been a fan of the NTS-1 itself. I've always thought it was a bit lacking. And yeah, it's fun and it's a gimmick to kind of put things together and that, but it hasn't really spoken to me. But this Mark II, if you put in the Mark II, the fact that you can do MIDI and audio in and run it as an effects box, that really speaks to me.
Well, you could do all of that with this one, though. It's got MIDI in and it's an audio. I like the new effects, but I don't want you to speak ill of the NTS-1 OG because it's awesome, man. The sound on that thing is a beast.
It's never really spoken. I've been looking at it. It's never really spoken to me. I don't know why, but I think
you're entitled to that. I wanted to clarify a few things just so it wasn't misinformed.
That's fair enough. But yeah, no, this new one looks really nice. I like where it can go. And so you never know. Christmas coming. A little stocking filler for that.
I got mine for Christmas. Yeah. I got mine. My wife got it for me like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But, I mean, it's an awesome little thing. And I mean, yeah, you can be frustrated that you have to build it, but it's actually pretty fun to do. And it takes 2 seconds. And I believe part of the affordability comes from the fact that you put it together. But I mean, I'm sure people sell it built like aftermarket or whatever, but it's seriously so easy to do, and it takes like a minute.
Building service.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. Smiling Air says that keyboard is for child prodigies only. I mean, I don't even think they could do that one. The keyboard, it was the worst part, but you do get MIDI in even on the original, so you could just bypass it that way. But it's fun. And even just for drones, like just holding a note or doing something like that, you can do some crazy stuff. Frequency Control Center, one of our label mates, just got the original, which once this came out, I felt so bad that he just got it. But I mean, the original's great, but I was like, oh man, that sucks. They just put the new one out. But he found some, because there's, I think it's like on GitHub or whatever, people put other, what do you call it, oscillators, whatever you want to call it, but other things within these. So you can download all these different types of oscillators and stuff like that people make. And he got one that's like built for drones, similar to that Stylophone synth that Curtis was all about last week. But he sent it to me and I got to download it for this. But yeah, I mean, from what he was showing me, it sounds really crazy with what. So there's a lot you can do with it. And I think Lars in the chat is trying to get another one of our Trinity of Kalimba lifts. But he says stocking stuffer like a Kalimba. Oh yeah, I'm like slow on it, but he got it. Slow on the draw, but he got it. There you go, Lars. There you go.
In the middle of the year, I'll have you know.
There you go. Yeah.
Kalimbas are great. Kalimbas are awesome. Everyone should have a kalimba and then run it through a fuck ton of effects. Exactly.
Gotta get a kalimba, haven't you?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'll tell you what, Curtis. Kalimba. Through the NTS-1. How about that? You said Kalimba through a bunch of effects. Now that might have your brain.
That's kind of where we're going to go with it. That's where we're thinking.
It's just got a pickup in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a little pickup. You put it in and it goes in. And
electro-acoustic Kalimba.
You don't even need the microphone then, huh? Wow. Who needs air? Right? Yeah. Ross says Kalimbas make Secret Santa easy. Yeah. Unless you already have a Kalimba, then I guess it gets complicated. Yeah. But Bendu needs one, so here we go. If anybody needs a Secret Santa at the end of the year for Bendu,
I think everyone needs a
guitar. Say again, Ian, like
strap it to a guitar.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
We'd love to see it. I'd love to see it. I think the world would be a better place if everyone had a kalimba in their rig, just in general. I think just to have it there and just kind of fuck around with it.
Yeah, I mean, when I was waiting for you guys to hop in the chat, I was just playing the kalimba. I was like, ooh, maybe I can do some swing style, you know, like arpeggios on it.
One of those, do you even do music?
Them's fighting words, man.
If you don't have a kalimba, are you even a synthesist? That's really what we should be asking ourselves. We are very inclusive here. We love it, but you need a kalimba. That's basically how it goes, in my opinion. but yes, the NTS-1 Mark II looks really nice. Now, you're off the NAMM at the weekend, so maybe you can find the price, because I think, according to the articles that we've been reading, Sunwarper, they're going to announce it at NAMM. Now, obviously, it's not like a head, it's not like a leading kind of headline act, but you are going to NAMM at the weekend. So, two things. One, is there going to be an upgrade on Kalimbas? And two, how much is the NTS one going
to be? Okay, first, you can't upgrade a Kalimba. It's the perfect instrument.
Yeah. It's done.
It's done. There will never be an upgrade.
I like that.
Yeah, I'll check though. I'll see what they got. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to even film and all that. I'm trying to figure out how I want to do it all, because like if I want to even and am able to even capture audio and stuff like that. So I got to figure all that out. There's still a couple days. We'll see.
Yeah. No hurry.
If nothing else, I'll at least film some B-roll and talk over it, you know?
Yeah.
You don't need sound. You just need the image and then just you playing Kalimba.
I was going to say, we'll just put some Kalimba sounds underneath it. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Very much so. So, yeah, that's the NTS One Mark II getting ready for, well, I suppose next Christmas. But it looks like a little fun thing. And the idea of building your own little synth, I'd love to. Like, when I get a Forever Home, when I'm one of those weird-ass dads with a workshop that's far too big for its own good, I intend to build a Euro rack.
You're inspired to the two of us now.
The weirdest dad. Welcome to the weirdest dad competition.
It's going to be lovely. It's going to be lovely. So, yeah, that's where we're at. Any more on that before we
continue? Yeah, real quick. Lars may have found a possible upgrade to a Kalimba. One of those big piano keyboards you can walk on, except it's a Kalimba. So that's either an offshoot of perfection, or it is just the next evolution of perfection.
Like a massive one that you kick the ends of it.
Yeah, I'm thinking like that movie Big, right? You know, Big, that movie where they're on the piano, it's just like dueling Kalimbas, like, right? You know,
Well, okay,
you bounce off of it like a pool or something, you know, like.
I imagine it'd be one of those things, you know, when you're going for the diving board where you run up and you're going to jump, and at the last minute, as you come down, you slip, and then you just go into the pool
and it would back your head as you...
And you just hit the back of your head as you go down. Yeah, that's the only way that's ever going to work.
I mean, what a way to go, though.
Exactly. Speaking of a way to go, people, thank you ever so much. This show is brought to us by our patrons. That is the way to go. So thank you ever so much for those who have given their support. this show is brought to us by our patrons. There's many of you in the chat today. Bendu, Lars, for two of you, thank you ever so much. We really appreciate your support. And Abby, yes, thank you, Abby. Yeah, who is not muted this week, which is even better and amazing. Thank you for your support. You keep us running. Your help, you are the ones building the community, and we really appreciate you. If you watching live, or happen to be on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify listening to this, and you're not a patron, but you like what we do, perhaps consider becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/audionautic and pledges start as little as $2 a month. And there's a wonderful little community of patrons growing here. There's lots of extra content, such as Starstream, for example, which we will be revamping again in February, where we basically get together and do this unrecorded on a Sunday evening. And it's really great fun. And we just kind of chat everything, mainly about envelope followers and LFOs, which is really good. That's the trip I'm on at the moment, anyway.
What and else massive do they get Kalimbas.
Massive Kalimbas, exactly. What else do they get somewhere?
Yeah, so you get an exclusive chat group on the Discord and some other channels on the Discord and different tiers. Get some other things like our music, early access to all the music we'll be releasing on Audionautic Records throughout the year. But mainly, it's the support from all of you that allow us to do these podcasts every week and continue to build the Discord for everyone, making a positive space for talking synths, music marketing, production, all that kind of stuff with people who actually understand it and want to talk about this kind of stuff. So your support means the world. And if you want to check it out, the link is in the description, patreon.com/audionautic.
Wonderful. Yes. And as one of the benefits, for those patrons who are $7 and over, get early access and download codes for my and Sunwarper's releases. Now, Sunwarper had a release over the weekend. Music for Imagine Landscapes. It's been a few days now. We had a listening party over the weekend. How are you feeling?
That was a lot of fun. That listening party was a lot of fun. I'm feeling terrible. I haven't slept in days with the newborn, but the listening party was a lot of fun. We had a lot of people in there. I think it was like 20, something like that. So that was really awesome. It was great to talk with everybody, and massive thanks to everybody that supported it. It was really cool. But I really like doing those listening parties. We'll be doing one every month for every artist we've got on Audionautic Records this year. And they're a lot of fun to just kind of like talk about the music. And like Hydro Fighter was asking about some stuff or commenting about ARPs, and we were talking production things and how often I was using Repro when I was in the DAW. But a lot of it was actually DAW-less for this album. So that was the big thing, was shifting my production and moving to DAW-less. Yeah.
Well, yeah, very much so. And so it was part of these releases and part of like pushing the label this year. We're kind of having these sit down interviews. And one of the really interesting things that personally I have come across with Sunwarper over the last year or so is his deep dive and his fascination and his determination to go into the DAW-less setup. And here we go. There is MIDI Mountain. There is MIDI Mountain. It is there.
Now with the Prophet plugged in too. Oh, I almost hit that, but we're good. The Prophet, mixer, all that. We'll talk about it.
Oh, it's going to be great. So, yeah. So, in the true style of yin and yang, Sunwarper in the last year has gone full DAW-less, and I have gone fully into the DAW. And so we're going to be discussing Sunwarper's reasons for jumping into the DAW-less world, and why you, as a listener slash viewer slash whatever it happens to be, however you're getting this in, be it telepathically or whatever, how and why DAW-less is a great thing to go for in 2024. Now, we have made some questions. Let's go into it.
Let's do it.
So Sunwarper, let's do it.
Actually, first, let me read a couple of chats because we got some funny ones. Lars was saying, waiting for the day one of you has to do a Raycon ad read. Yeah, continue dreaming then for that, Lars. And Smiley Air says, Raid, he meant Raid, there's a correction later, but Raid Shadow Legends. Again, we won't be doing those.
We are way off.
Yeah, no, we Raid Shadow Legends, no. Lars, don't worry about that, man. Freemium games, no. But I was saying that the Patreon means we don't have to do things like that, because it's support from all of you awesome subscribers that we don't have to worry about that. That's not one of our end goals there. So don't worry about that. But if you do want to help support and help us do more of this kind of stuff, like me going to NAMM this week and stuff, Patreon's the way to go. It helps a ton. But of course, just watching is always more than enough. But yeah, there's options if you want to help. And back to the music. Pat Brady said, lots of fun at the listening party. The album sounds ace. Thank you. Really appreciate
it
that.
It really does.
Also appreciate that, Eon. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Eon, like, why don't you give your elevator description of Music for Imagined Landscapes before we go into some questioning about DAW-less setup? Because you are
You know, put me on the spot like that.
But There's no such thing as a wrong answer, my friend.
Collection of tracks, and as a collection, I mean, what a collection. It's about 18 tracks or something on the digital version.
What's 14 of actual Imagined Landscapes, then a couple bonus tracks.
And alternate versions and so on.
And then there's a B-side on the CD too.
Sorry, you really got me with B-side on the CD. What? You turn it over?
No. You can't do that. Well, yeah, if you flip the CD over, you get the silent B-side that breaks your CD player.
Just a smoking CD player. Yeah,
the smoke from your CD player is the B-side. It's very interactive.
Wow, you can do that now.
We think of everything at Audionautic Records. No, there's just an added song that is a B-side to the album.
But yes, sorry. Yeah, somewhere in the region of 18 tracks. They were all actually a response to a visual image as well, weren't they? As opposed to the other
somewhat
way around.
Vice versa to a degree. So I came up with the concept and the music. Like, I had the image, the mindset of like, okay, this is kind of what I want. But then the sound was about translating to visuals. So like, it was kind of like a cross. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But that's a good
series
way to put it.
Well, there's a narrative that goes through them as well. So there's a text to narrative that goes with each song and each visual. There's a rather pretty booklet if you get the physical that goes through all of this, and the artwork is really lovely, actually. I was looking at a couple of the trailers today, where the moving ones.
Oh, yeah. I've been doing those every night. Like 11 really p.m. I'm like, oh, crap. I got to do another one.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a great... It's just a load of shifting moods, you know, and there's a lot of different sort of environments, a lot of different feels, a lot of different styles, but they hang together beautifully and they complement each other. And yeah, it was a really good listen. We had a lot of fun listening to it, and I hadn't seen any of the text that sort of explained the sort of background to each song before, so it was good to sort of add that in and get the whole experience. But yeah, it's a good journey from through all sorts of different emotional sort of states. I think a lot of it really comes across.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was hoping. The whole point was kind of like harkening back to my youth growing up with PlayStation and N64 and stuff like that. And like those, like I was telling you, Ian, like one of the songs was from the original idea where I was going to create sound fonts, like the N64 sound font for this and that. And it was all about that. And so the images are kind of meant to be like you're on these levels of a video game, right? Like it's the story of an explorer figuring out that they want to leave the planet, find new worlds and things. And then they land on these, and sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's good, you know, like what they discover and stuff. But that's the whole point. So yeah, it was then figuring out how do I translate that to music, right? And as time went on, some of the songs I had to use a DAW, because like Departure Point had 90 tracks. There's no way I could do that DAW-less. But a lot of the songs were built around DAW-less setups, where I was like just experimenting, sampling sounds, resampling them. So that was like the basis was this, the whole album was this kind of transition from the DAW into the DAW-less setup.
Well, that's something that comes across well as well, because it's not just the styles of the song, but it's also the way that they're realized, the number of tracks used to create them. You know, it's everything from a relatively simple but still atmospheric vignette with just a couple of tracks in it to, you know, a really, you know, I was going to say overblown, but that sounds a bit negative, but you know, maximalist in all the best
way. The Eon-like method.
96 tracker, exactly. You see, you know I'm going to appreciate that. Yeah. And they stand side by side really well, and it just provides more variety for the album, you know, and gives you... more textural range, you know. It's a bigger palette to draw with, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think too, just it was, as I get more into DAW-less, it's a way for me to get out of, which we'll be talking about in the round robin, but the perfectionist tendencies. Like I don't have to basically, you know, depending on how you route it, which we'll talk about as you ask the questions, Curtis, but sometimes you're stuck with the stereo 2-track. So it's like whatever the mix was when you jammed it out, you can either rejam or you're stuck with it, or you can stem split it, but you know, you'll get some artifacting.
Yeah.
Well, I think that leads us nicely into the first question that we get here. So obviously you went DAW-less about a year ago, 12 months ish ago, I think. So what is it about going DAW-less that has been so productive and enlightening for you?
Well, I talk about it all the time, but I think it's worth mentioning again. It's the reason I like DAW-less so much is the tactile response. Like when you move a filter knob, something's happening, and it's just different than if I'm just using a mouse and either automating it, or like there's just that human error. There's things changing. And then the biggest thing too, and it probably sounds like a negative, but I find it actually helps, is the force limitations. Like when I had only the circuit tracks and the SP404, I had six built-in tracks on the circuit and two MIDI tracks, and then the SP. So that was all I could work with, right? And maybe, you know, I could try and hit the SP and the circuit at the same time to keep things in sync, but that could go off. But then you figure out kind of what you need, and you build your setup similar to a modular setup, but you build your setup around that, and then you can do what you want and kind of work with it. But having that, like, oh, everything's going through the SP, so when it gets sent to the computer to record, it's a 2-track. That's it. So you have to work within that and figure out the mix as you go, or, you know, do things like that.
Make decisions and commit rather than, you know, oh, I can always undo it later. I'll keep everything separate. You know, I'll have total recall on every single channel, so I don't need to decide anything ever until the very end when you're crippled by decisions. You just commit. You just follow your vision. You do what you're doing.
Yeah.
And you don't redo anything unless you had a problem with it.
Yeah, because when I'm stuck in a DAW, and it's not stuck, DAWs are amazing. Like, I still use the DAW, right? We just talked about some of the songs on there are using it. But it's option paralysis, right? You can just, you can keep redoing a track. You can keep re-editing the MIDI, adjust it however you want, do things like that. And how many plugins do you have that you, oh, well, I like this reverb, but maybe I could do this reverb or this and that. And one workaround could be bake your tracks to audio, right? Commit them to audio. And then, but you could still keep adding plugins after that. Or like, I've never fully committed. I always keep it muted, the MIDI, and then I have it if I need it, right? But that's a problem for me. So it's like that. But then even more important than that is you don't have to think, it's common to, and I think it's easy to think of it like this way, but DAW versus DAWless doesn't have to be either or. It can be both and.
Yeah.
You can have a hybrid setup, right? Depending how you route your setup, you can either send, like my original hybrid setup, I had certain hardwares all connected via MIDI, but the audio was all going separately into the audio interface. So as long as the audio interface was set to the right BPM, I had all of that as separate channels that I could then mix in the DAW if I wanted to, or I could add things like MIDI and things like that on top of it. And you could even send MIDI from your synths into the DAW so that all that MIDI's tracked. So there's a way to do that. You could just track everything. And then if you need to do overdubs, you can send it back. But then you're getting more into that whole, you know, like not perfectionist, but you can keep editing and stuff like that. So depending on how you work and what you like, you can work things. And like the, let me see if you can see it, but the DigiTact has overbridge. So what that means is it can send all of its separate channels, all eight MIDI tracks and all eight, no, not all eight MIDI tracks. I think that's sent as an audio track, but all eight of the built-in tracks and then an audio track get sent separately into the computer. And so that's another way you could route everything through that, and you could have some things right there too. So it's kind of like the sky's the limit, depending on how complex you want to get it, or if you want to get reductionist and just have that, you know, one thing.
Yeah. The other reason that I do some stuff outside of a door is because I want the music that I'm making to be more performative. And to have a bit more vibe in it. And so there's, you know, subtle human variation in it, like you get when any sort of musician plays their instrument. Now, I'm not that great with a number of instruments. I am a drummer, and you'll know that if you hear me play a keyboard. So, it's forcing me to practice more, and it's forcing me to get longer takes that are more evolved, that there's more happening in, rather than, you know, recycling smaller pieces. You know, because I just can't stand that when it sounds like just one thing just repeating. You know, I like longer takes that evolve and have movement in them and so on. And it's a chance to sort of practice that and push things in that direction a bit more. And I think it's really helpful.
Yeah, and me personally, I find sampling
afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. But me personally, I find sampling a lot more fun on hardware. Mm. Like you're kind of, again, you're stuck with these limitations or constraints of the machine and how it does sampling, but it's just that response of moving knobs and it happening. I don't know. It just clicks better. And then you also, I mean, we can get into like, what is it? Audio to digital conversion when you're using all the different cables and some of them that do that, and you just get a little more oomph to things and things. So it really just depends what your needs are, but if you're looking at DAWless, you need to kind of consider all these sorts of things, like how much post work do you want to do? Are you dealing with perfectionist tendencies where you don't want to deal with that? And it's kind of like, just give me the two track and I just want to deal with it like that. There's a lot of things to consider. So we have some comments before we get to the next question, Curtis. I just want to go over. Pat says, multi-tracking required. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's required, but it is, if that's what you're going for, if you're going for maximalist things or something like that, which they later say hybrid, agreed, use it all. Yeah, definitely. That's like the, you can look at it in all these different tiers and stages of DAWless, DAW, you know, the hybrid way in between it and all that. Smiling Air says, I feel that some genres definitely lend themselves to DAWless, others less so. Hmm. I would be inclined to agree with that to a degree. I mean, I think you can make anything on anything, but some things like when you need 90 tracks, like with six layers of bass, yeah, you might need to go with the DAW.
We'll get six bass players.
Or sample six times the bass in the SP or something. Yeah, I mean, like I said, you can still do it. It's just how much work you want to put into it versus just having, okay, copy the track, change some settings, you know.
And I think that at least makes you think, is it worth the effort, right? Do you benefit from it? Because when it's absolutely zero effort to do, you might find yourself doing these things just because it occurs to you, whereas where you have to actually go through some sort of process or slight inconvenience to do that, it makes you consider whether or not it's something you really need to do or not, whether or not it benefits your track or your sound, what it is you're trying to accomplish, might help you streamline what you do in the future as well. We've talked about it before. It's like, I guess it's only when you try lots of different ways of making music that you start to settle on what works best for you, because you've tried the options and you know what mixture is the right mix for you, and you know the gear you have, the software you have, whatever. If you don't try, you'll never know.
Wise words.
It's always the way. If you don't try, you'll never know. Okay, in the name of considerations and trying things out, if one wants to get into doorless making some more, in your experience, where does one start? What hardware should be considered to kind of kick this off?
So I kind of break it down typically into three things. The brain, a sampler, and synths. And synths can also be drum machines, you know, all that stuff, but kind of like three sort of three different things. The brain is something that can sequence, and, you know, it could also be a sampler or something like an MPC, even an SP-404, Digitact, Circuit Tracks. What are those Roland ones? The MC-707?
Groove boxes.
Yeah, the groove, basically, like, I'm thinking groove boxes or even like, you know, something that can sequence, like I think BeatStep Pro or whatever, you know, something like that, something that you can sequence machines with. So you're sending MIDI and you can control all of these machines. I mean, you don't have to have a brain. Like in the way I'm talking, you could just have synths that are all connected with a time, like the time sync and stuff, but then you got to do a lot with that. But if you have something where you can start by triggering and setting MIDI and sending it to these different synths, but that can also do its own work, that's a really good base. Like I started with the Circuit Tracks, and like I was saying, you get six built-in sound things. So two of them are synths and four of them are like sample bass, but you can't do a lot to the samples. It's really like playing one shots for drums. And then you get two MIDI. So you can then send MIDI to, what I always do is the Erebus from Dreadbox and the Behringer MS-1. And then I got the SP-404, which is a sampler. So I like the sampler because the sampler is kind of the cheat code for getting out of the limitations of a DAW-less setup, because anything you make on the setup, you can just sample into it. And then if you connect it with MIDI, you can just sequence it. So you can kind of get those six tracks of bass like a DAW, or have 90 tracks because you could just have all those samples. I like the 404 because you can get long sample time. So you could sample a whole song into a pad, or, you know, a whole set even, and you could chop it up. You can do all that. But with the sampler, you can just do crazy things. You can chop sounds up, you can resequence them, do stuff like that. Digitact is kind of both. It's a sampler, but with some caveats in terms of like short sampling length and things like that. But it's also a really good brain. MPC can kind of do it all, but you're getting more into that like DAW look where it's got a screen, it's got easy to move MIDI and stuff. That's not a bad thing, but it's something if you're trying to get a break from the like very obvious DAW work, which is what I like to do, like have things that you can click and move around and stuff, that's the way to go. And then synths, like I already mentioned, I have a few here, but you can get any synth. You can even get an NTS-1 like we're talking about, and you can control that with the MIDI from your sequencer or your brain, and then sample those sounds in and then make more sounds with it because you have that like variable setup. So that's typically how I recommend to do DAW-less, is start with the brain. And even just like a groove box and a sampler is a great way to go, or just like a Digitact or an MPC or a SP-4, but have a brain, sampler, and synths. Like if that's the type, if you want to make more complex sounding things and more intricate things, the sampler can work on it. If you don't need that and you want to go more minimalist, maybe just a groove box or groove box and a synth or two. And there's lots of different options in terms of budget. You know, you can get an affordable polysynth that can do four voices, like the Mini Log, which I think is what, $500-$600. You can get smaller things, like the Erebus is a mono synth. That's another one. And a lot of these groove boxes and things like that, even the sequencers, things like that, will have built-in sounds. So you may not need much outside of it, but it is nice to then have something else, like even a small one like the NTS-1 or the Korg Volkas that you can just move and change sounds with and things like that. That's yeah. That would be my recommendation. I don't know, Curtis or Eon, like if you have more. I just want to check the chat. Ross says brain equals sequencer. Technically, yes, that's kind of what I mean. But when I say brain, I mean something that can control your setup. So yes, a sequencer, like a main clock
as well. Yeah,
exactly. Main clock, sequence. Maybe it can get audio into it so that you can do some effects. Like the circuit has built-in effects for the audio coming back into it, as does the DigiTact. So kind of something that can be like your hub and act as like the centerpiece of your setup.
Mm.
Yeah. Lars says scarecrow Dallas setup. Is that okay? And Ross says, I think that people learn to create with the tools they have when they start, probably informing their behaviors deeply for their entire journey. Yeah, I mean, definitely. But then you can also get out of it. Like if you're feeling stuck, like we talk about writer's block, that's why I got away from the DAW. I still use a DAW for like commission work because I need to be able to change things quickly and stuff. But when I want to create, I want to just be able to like get away from all the options, get away from all that. So I like learned this whole method because I grew up with the DAW and a guitar, you know, so it was a big transition for me, but it definitely, I like the way it works. And it's probably not for everyone. Like Smiling Era says, I used to make 9-inch nails type stuff happily in the 90s and hardware, but I wouldn't want to do that now with the freedom I have on the software. And it's like, it depends. I think it just depends on the person. Like, do you look at all the options in software as freedom and you just love being, you can do it, you can finish your tracks, feel like, you know, oh, it's done, I don't need to keep tweaking it? Or do you get caught in that perfectionist loop where it's like, well, I could tweak this, oh, but because I lowered the bass here, now the bass or the hi-hat's too loud or this and that, and then you just get lost in it. So it all depends how you do it.
If you see that as ultimate freedom, then you're probably doing it the right way.
Yeah.
For now, at least.
Yeah.
But so, I noticed when you were talking about considerations there for what you should include it, there are a lot of parallels between that and how I decided to populate all my Eurorack stuff. So I decided early on that I wasn't going to try and do drums in it. I don't want to waste a lot of rack space on drums and so on when I've already got groove boxes and stuff like that. What I wanted to do was, I've got two samplers in the rack so that I can sample drums in or loops in and have that play, and I can use the rest of the space for voices and for sequencing and for modulation and all the crazy stuff that you can't sort of do any other way. I didn't really want to waste valuable space on drum sounds. And there's a similar compromise you need to make if you're just doing something without a door and you need something that's going to run a clock and so that everything's hooked up and talking together. Probably the most useful thing you could possibly have is a sampler, because it's everything in one, isn't it? I mean,
that's what I was just going to say. If you need drums, sample one shots, throw it in a sampler, yeah. Right? You know?
And if you need synths, but you can't afford synths, I mean, the easiest way to get thick poly synths is to use software, and you can just sample software. You don't even have to own the plugin, right? Go to a mate's house, it's got some good plugins.
Yeah.
Play a load of stuff, sample them, and you're off.
That's actually the other thing too to mention about samplers. Make sure you look into something that can do, if you're doing that type of stuff and you want to use a sampler for chords and things like that, either sample the chords or make sure it can do chromatic polyphonic sampling. So like the SP can do polyphonic sampling. It was added in an update. It wasn't originally there. The DigiTac can only do monophonic. So if you sample, let's say, a one shot from, let's just do the MS-1, right? Like a little dupe. If you put that in the SP-404, you could play that as chords. If you put that into the DigiTac, you can just do single notes. So keep that in mind if you're looking for that type of sound and doing things like that. Make sure you look at what each machine offers. MPC can definitely do polyphonic, right? Eon Lake, I'm sure it can. That thing's a beast.
Yes, yeah, it can. Yeah. Another thing to bear in mind is playing straight from disc as well, because the SP I don't think does that, but the black box does.
Yeah, does
well.
Yeah, the thing with the SP though is you get 16 projects all with 10 banks. So you get a lot of with space you can just throw onto the SP. So
I think the black box does great for long samples, stereo samples, streaming direct from disc and stuff like that. So to my mind, it's like, well, all the audio content, the pad content and everything will get sampled onto that. But the more rhythmical content and so on that I want to mess around with more is going to go in the SP.
Yeah. Now the black box though has, it's mostly touchscreen, right?
Mostly.
It's got other things to consider, you know,
as well.
Yeah. If like you don't want a large touchscreen workflow, consider, you know, your options and things like that.
Well, considering in the name of considering options, obviously Dawless requires somewhat of an investment in gear and in boxes and little bleepy bloopy boxes that make weird sounds and noises. And it can get quite pricey, especially if you're beginning and if you're starting out. For example, the Digitact is what, $23K. So how much is that in dollars? What's
I got it for $800.
$800, which is quite a hefty investment in what you want to do. The question becomes at that stage, are there any cost saving methods that you can recommend?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. First would be used, you know, reverb.com or something like that. That's a big one. Another one is to check out, we've covered it and I cover it a lot on my YouTube channel, but iOS apps. There's so many replicas of like Moog synths, Prophet synth, this and that. And then there's all these kinds of, even like Koala Sampler. That's a great, technically DAW-less sampler that you could use as your sampler for $5. And that's your sampler. So if you want to buy like a Circuit Trax for $400 and the Koala Sampler, MIDI sync it, do all that, and you're good to go. I mean, you could do a ton with Koala Sampler. Lars says eBay. Yeah, any sort of like used things is a great way to go. But definitely iPad, iPhone, iOS apps, or whatever phone type you use. Like, look at that. AudioKit Pro, we've covered a lot of their stuff. A lot of it is free. Like, I believe King of FM, you get an insane FM synth. It's free. And they say it will always be and stuff. So there's a lot of free ones you can check out. Koala Sampler is $5 for the original version. And then there's two or three updates that are each like $4 or $5. With one of them, you get stem separation, which we talked about on the MPC last week. So if you like what I was saying, if you make tracks with the DAW-less setup and you're like, oh no, the hi-hat's too loud or something, you can do stem separation with Koala. But I find there's some artifacts. Hopefully that's something they've been working on and can, you know, update as things get better and better. But I would definitely look into iOS apps, used marketplaces. I think even probably like Facebook Marketplace or something like that, if you even are on it. But that's what I would do. And then I would also just say, make sure, I mean, you don't have to do this, but if you're looking to make it more budget friendly, look at what you need and like how you want to start. And you can always message me if you're looking to get into DAW-less, but like, don't just go like, oh, I need a sampler, so I'm going to buy the Digitact, or I'm going to buy the SP, or like, look what you need, right? Like, maybe you don't need polyphonic sampling. So, okay, I don't have to have that, but oh, I do want long sample time. Okay, well, some samplers don't have long sample time. The EP133 doesn't, the Digitact doesn't, stuff like that. So you need to look into those kinds of things. And another one too, I mean... the pocket operators.
Yeah.
Like, that's just talking about the EP133, but $100 for a sampler that can do a couple voices, or, you know, a little drum machine, just to get started, to kind of like test the water, see if you like that type of stuff. But I think the most cost effective way, Curtis, is iOS or phone apps, and just kind of like seeing, but you are then stuck with a touchscreen. So you could do MIDI sync to like a MIDI keyboard, which I did with Koala, and you can choose on MIDI, like, oh, I want this knob to control the filter and this and that. Because like Smiling Airs was saying, I miss drum pads the most when I'm on PC. I mean, you can obviously, on a DAW setup, like Curtis has a couple different little MIDI controllers that you can do a lot with. So there is that. But like with the DAW-less setup, you get a lot of tactile response, which is what we were talking at the top of the segment. Like, you can do a lot. There's any movement you make changes something. And that's like one of my favorite things about it. But a couple other low cost samplers I want to mention. I mentioned the EP133, the PO33, both from Teenage Engineering, Live and Lo-Fi 12, I believe it is. That's $240. The Circuit Rhythm, which is monophonic, think that's 400 or 500. That thing's pretty cool. Circuit Tracks is a great groove box and brain. Like, if you need some cost effective, Circuit Tracks is a great way to go from Novation, because I've talked about it a lot, but all the stuff you can do with it, it's a great little hub. It even acts as a mixer, because you can have the two audio tracks going in controlled separately and mix those separately, and it has built-in reverb and delay. So yeah, I would say definitely like map out how you want to build it if you want to be budget conscious. And Asaf Stripe is in the chat. How's it going? Finally got away from work. Glad to see you. He says, I like the 1010 Tangerine. Yeah. Oh, those are those small. Are those the smaller little boxes that they make, right? Yeah, they make a few different ones, though.
I've seen the Tangerine. I've seen the Lemon Drop and the, what was the other one? The red one. I forget
all the names. Those are kind of pricey, aren't they? Like, for their size and stuff. Aren't they like 300, 400 or something? They're pretty tiny, but they're awesome. I mean, no hate on it. I'm just mentioning, if you're considering price, that's something. Smiling Airs asks, can you do automation on the sequencer on the Digitech? Oh, yeah. It's per step, and it is insane how in-depth you can go. If you check out my live streams with it, I mean, you can do some... You can set a sample on one step of the sequence, and then on the next one say, no, now do this sample, and then on the next one do that. Like, there's so much you can do, and you can do... It's just crazy. Yeah, even the SP has automation for effects now in pattern sequencing. So there's a lot you can do there. Yeah, Asaf says, Tangerine is a sampler. Is that for 400? Wow, that's pretty expensive. I got to see what its specs are. How many samples at a time and all that, you know, voices and things. But yeah.
So once again, you know, the advice here seems a lot like, you know, how do I start a go with Eurorack? And it's a similar thing. It's, you know, I think very seriously about what you need, and only an idiot would go and buy everything up front, because what you think you're going to need is just not necessarily what you're going to need. You're much better off just thinking, what do I absolutely need to start with and grow from there? And it can be a project, right? And you benefit from the fact that you have limitations and you have to be creative in the first place. And then when you're looking to get all this other stuff, you have to just like, well, what can I not do without for the next thing? Because I can't buy everything. It's too expensive, you know, and that's actually a good thing, you know, because you could waste a lot of money. Okay, there's good resale value. You know, you can just sell a bit of kit and get something different. But it is much better if your setup grows with you and with your process, because, you know, you and how you go about things may change as a result of the things that you have, you know. There's no getting away from that.
I think that's a really good point, because one thing I wanted to mention too, and I've done it, and part of the whole journey of Music for Imagined Landscapes was this, but learn each machine you get before you get another one. Like, really learn the ins and outs and all of its secrets and work-throughs and like workarounds. Like, there's a lot of limitations on some Dawless gear. The SP404 is a lot going for it, but there's a lot of limitations. But learning to make the most of it, you'll learn how to do things. Just like I always say with stock plugins, like, learn that thing inside and out before you buy a non-stock plugin. Cause then when you get that, you can probably do a lot more and you'll know it. And usually, like, I use the stock Logic compressor for most everything. I have a bunch of different compressors from all these different companies. I know that Logic one inside and out, and it has all the different options for different types of compression and all that type of stuff. So when I need the compressor, I'm usually going to that one, because I just know it in and out. And I would say with a Dawless setup, like, know each piece of gear, because it's easy. And I know we're partly to blame, you know, in a sense, with covering all the latest gear, but it's easy to get caught in that gas, like the gear acquisition syndrome, like, oh, I need this now, or, oh, it does 18 voices. Like, oh, I'm going to do that. I mean, I want this. But it's like, figure out and learn how to make it work as you go, and then you usually can avoid a lot of that and really learn how it works. And it looks like Lars needed to hear that advice a lot earlier. So I put Eon Legs, but way too late on that advice, Sun Warper. Well, at least someone else can get that advice and hopefully save them from the life you lead. Yeah, we gotta help others, my friend. We gotta help others. Yeah, we gotta help others. Asaf says, absolutely. Smiling Air says, I might be that idiot if my VST purchase history is anything to go by. No, I mean, getting lots of stuff is awesome. Don't get me wrong. And if you have the budget and stuff, but we're talking, to answer Curtis, budget. So that's what we bring up.
I think everything's a balance in that, right? I think we go through phases, don't we? You go through phases of buying every VST and every synth that you can get your hands on when you got the money. And you let your gear acquisition syndrome go through the roof. And then there's time to take back, take stock, and kind of go through it in that regard. And I think that's part of the journey in its own right in that regard. And there is credence to be said for learning a synthesizer in and out, like the Novation, for example, my Ultra Nova, I can make sing any way I want it to do. And then there's also the understanding and the knowledge that, you know, what's missing from your setup and what you could do in order to grow with the overarching idea. So it's neither one or the other in that regard. I think there's a balance to be struck. I think the balance is, can your bank balance handle it? I think it's the main question at the end of the day.
Yeah, as Asaph says, it's too late for us. But there are others that can still learn from this advice and not fall down that rabbit hole, you know? And then there's always someone new getting into gear or getting into anything. So.
And, you know, people are maybe on the younger end of the scale and not earning their millions yet. You know, they need to know about how you can actually save a bit of money here. And it's true. I mean, I've got a bunch of hardware here, some of which is quite monstrous sounding. And I've had people point out parts and songs and go, that sound is beastly. And it's like, yeah, that's my phone. That's not any of these synths that I've got all around me. That was actually my phone, and it does sound good. So, you know, that's it, really. That's all it ever comes down to is, what does it sound like? Does it sound good? Because that's it, really. That's the be all and end all.
Does it sound like, is it something that you're happy with? Is it something that speaks to you? Is it something that is an extension of your creative expression? At the end of the day, that's the only question that needs to be fundamentally asked.
Definitely. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Like, just make it sound good, dude. That's what we always say. And it's true. Like, iOS, iPhone, whatever, Kalimba through a bunch of processing or not through processing.
Especially through a bunch of processing. Yeah.
Especially not through a bunch of processing. You want it to sound like a Kalimba. For true Kalimba props, you know? But no, it's just, and that's what I'm saying about learning everything before you go. You don't have to, but if you know it inside and out, you can make pretty much anything sound crazy good. And then you don't need to worry about all that and get caught in that, oh, I need to buy this gear and buy that gear and buy that. And if you got a sampler, you don't have to buy most because you can just sample it.
This is true. Well, thank you ever so much. Music for Imagined Landscapes is now out on audionauticrecords.bandcamp.com. You can grab it there. It's there in digital form and in a CD. And if you get a CD, there's a little booklet that comes with it as well, which tells more of the story and the adventure itself, which both Sunwarper and us, by extension, have gone on over the past 12 months. Grab it while it's there. It's really nice.
Completely
objective opinion from someone who made the booklet and all the artwork. It is quite fun.
Say, don't take my word for it. Find out for yourself. You know, listen and make your own mind up.
Yeah, there's only 10 that were made and there's only a few left. So, if you want to get the CD booklet and all that stuff, check it out, audionauticrecords.bandcamp.com. But I just want to say it's been amazing this whole year. Releasing every month. I mean, we can talk about that at some point too, like monthly release schedules and doing art and promotion in that way. And like, I'm testing out a promotion thing for the release strategy where I'm releasing a video every day because, you know, I'm seeing like what happens with the algorithm when you do that, just out of curiosity, and not just algorithm, but audience rate. Like, are people continuing to interact? Do they drop off? You know, things like that. So if you guys want to hear about that research I'm doing, like, let me know. And we'll talk about it in an upcoming episode. But it's been incredible hearing from everyone over the last year because we released these publicly throughout the year once a month. And so it was a journey for me, for everyone. And so it just meant a lot to hear from everybody throughout it. And when things got really hard, like, you know, taking paternity leave and all that, and I was like, I still have to make a song. What am I going to do? Like, it was everybody just talking, telling me what these songs mean to them that got me through it. So I really appreciate everybody going on this journey with me. So, yeah.
It's wicked, absolutely wicked. And it's a great set of Sodex as well, so it's really good. So some fantastic releases and some fantastic music, some fantastic news over here on the European continent, which as of yet sadly doesn't include Eon Lake right about now. But the EU Parliament, if anyone could do the overlay while I have go through this news for you, we have been having some very terrible news in regards to streaming royalties as of late, but there is a beacon of hope, and that is because the European Parliament has decisively voted with in favor of creating fairness, sustainability, and cultural diversity in royalties. Basically, they made a vote at some point last week to address the issues and the imbalances in the market with revenue distribution, which has led many of us, many artists, to have their music continue to be undercompensated, or to some extent, even not compensated at all. So they voted to make these changes, and this involves involves revising pre-digital royalty rates and ensuring transparency for things like AI use in that regard. So there's going to be some changes coming in for music that's been made by AI, for example. There'll be a different tier for royalty rates in that regard, and there will be declarations that have to be made if you've been using AI and utilizing AI, or you've got wholeheartedly AI-generated content. This also, basically, the legislation is aiming to guarantee fair compensation, proper crediting of authors, transparency in the streaming services, and allowing fair creation for all. Doesn't that sound amazing, gentlemen? Doesn't that sound amazing as a caveat?
Yeah.
What a breath of fresh air. I mean, seriously. You know, as an Englishman, I wish people would stop making Europe further away. But I'm happy for the Europeans, definitely. In a world where we seem to be going the wrong way on a lot of things, it is a breath of fresh air for somebody to go, hang on a minute, this stuff's actually important. We should do this properly.
Yeah, let's see more countries do that. That's what we need. That's what we need. And like Lars says, so Spotify is going to pull out of the EU?
Yeah. All this is going through my head was Josh, as Curtis was saying it, and particularly, you know, I think it was saying, you know, changes are coming. I'm thinking, yeah, for some streaming giants, definitely. I mean, that might be one thing that tips it too far.
Maybe. I mean, we did see it in, I think it was, I could be wrong, someone might have to verify this. I think it was Peru. It was a South America, or maybe Uruguay. It was a South American country where they instigated similar reforms and similar oversight. And Spotify just went, right, we're out of here. And it was in South America. But I do feel, and I don't, maybe I'm putting too much supremacy on the European continent, but I feel like that's a bigger market. And I feel like that would be a little bit too much.
I'm looking something up. To your point, this is Yahoo Finance says by the year end of 2022, Spotify had about 433 million monthly active users. Among them, 34% are from Europe, 24% are from North America, that's Canada and the US, 22% from Latin America, and 20% from the rest of the world. So if they were to do that and pull out of the EU, at least according to this 2022 Yahoo Finance bit that I'm seeing, they'd lose 34% of their market. So maybe they can't do that. And so that is a good thing that maybe EU is putting some pressure on them, because if they are the biggest listener market and listener base, then them putting pressure on it would be good. And if we'd see the US or even Canada or someone follow suit, we might see something. I mean, yeah. It'd be interesting what the enforcement is. How is this all done? Like, you know, we'll have to see how that all plays out. But I mean, it's good news, which we don't get to talk about with streaming much. So
it's change. And we know there's going to be a lot more change coming. But it's nice to see some potentially
interesting. The bit about the AI stuff, like, how do you get that? I guess if they're saying you'd have to disclose if you used AI, but how would they really know? Per se,
to me, sounded a bit like, you know, they're equating the use of AI with like using heroin or something. You have to disclose if you're an AI user.
But I think it's fair enough.
maybe ironically well, AI.
There's a couple of things coming through. So Ari's take was having a chat with an AI music company the other day, and they're saying that they're being pressured to start basically declaring it, basically saying, yes, this is content that's generated by AI. You've got AI companies themselves, like bigger AI companies, such as like ChatGPT or OpenAI, for example, who are just screaming, actually lobbying governments for their own oversight and asking for regulation, because this is becoming a bit of a problem, and this could cause a runaway. And this could, if you're familiar with the concept of runaway, it could cause it to come a lot quicker than what we were thinking it would cause.
Just for those not familiar, give a what is runaway?
So runaway is this idea that once AI becomes so powerful that it continues its deep learning to a degree where we can't keep up with it, and essentially becomes too powerful. Essentially,
Skynet is what. Yeah.
Essentially, yeah, Skynet in that regard. So the idea is that, you know, you've got AI companies lobbying governments for to be regulated themselves, and you've got this notion from people or powerful bodies in the music industry saying, hey, why don't we declare that? Why don't we declare that AI is being used? Because that makes it a bit more of a fair game. It's like, if you're using artwork that's generated by AI, as in like Midjourney or Stable Diffusion or something like that, you kind of, there's this idea that where are you getting it from, and are you going to start declaring it, that kind of thing, which is definitely a good thing in my eyes.
And used is a very broad, right? I mean, you assume that when you talk about using AI, it's about for the generation of the music, for making it, right? But you could just be using an effects plugin that uses AI to analyze and apply, you know, cert to the
What about if you use ChatGPT to write your chord progression, you know, like where it's just these are, I mean, we're just surmising things and going, but
how would you classify it?
How does all of this get classified? Are there different levels? I mean, that's probably a talk for another day. I know we still got to get into the round robin, but it's something to consider. If you want to talk about all these potentialities and things, head to our Discord. The link is in the description. We talk about all this stuff all the time. Before we move on though, really quickly, Lars had mentioned, did you guys hear about Nightshade for AI art? I think that was something, I think I saw you retweet it or reshare it on Threads, Lars. Threads, of course, for Lars, but isn't that something where like people are trying to poison the well with the art they're generating from, like the art that is being pulled by the AI or, you know, look through or whatever, and it like throws it off so that it comes off weird. I don't know. I just saw what you posted and read it quickly. Haven't had time to look, but post it in the chat, Lars, or post it in the Discord, because it looked interesting. I do want to look into it, but we do have to move on to the round robin. So Curtis, do you want to mosey on over to the round robin?
Mosey on over to the round robin. Yeah, I've just put that link in the Discord in the off topic channel for anyone who's interested, from the MIT technology review about what that was. That's a really interesting topic, which maybe we can discuss another time. We are not an air technology podcast at all. So, but anyway,
but yes, AI generation does have its place. You know, like there is it's in music creation, the zeitgeist of music creation. So it is something to talk about, I think, later for another episode.
Very much so. Now, the round robin. Now, I can't decide. We'll let the people decide. We've got Perfectly Imperfect. And then we've also got, where are we here? We've got Persisting Perfectionist Prevention. Now, I prefer Sunwalkers, which was the first one. But we'll let the chat decide on this one. We've been trying to run around.
I didn't know you were going to generate those. I wouldn't have wasted the effort. But I'm glad you liked it. If it got a laugh, yeah, there we go.
It's good. I like it. It's cool. It tickled me. Yes, this week, and on this regard, we are looking at perfectionism in the studio. Perfectionism is something that we have all had to experience. We've all had to come through the idea of tweaking. We spoke about it earlier. One of the reasons that some people like Doorless, for example, is because you don't have that recall. You don't have that ability and that desire and that temptation to go back and notch and take things out and fiddle with things, blah, 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 all that stuff. And we can run in circles and we can get distraught and we can get all tied up in the idea of creating the perfect track. And this is a common thing, whether you've been making beats for 5 minutes or for 5 years, there are ways that it can be problematic. Now, I want to bring it to the table, but we want to bring it to the table. We want to throw it out there. How do we overcome our perfectionism? I hit my microphone. Hopefully that didn't hurt your ears, but because it's a big thing. So overcome perfectionism, gents. How do we get over it? What do we do? What mantras do we say to ourselves? What inner meditations are we expressing?
I actually want you to check your microphone because I wonder if you're using the laptop mic. You sound a little roomier to me, and when you bonked it, I didn't hear anything. Maybe really? I'm tripping. Just check.
No, that's his regular mic.
Is it? Okay. That it sounds regular mic. Yeah. Okay. It just sounds a little roomier. Maybe it's just a difference in placement or something today, but okay. Sorry, Curtis, and carry on.
No worries. No worries.
I have some thoughts on this.
Go ahead. Why don't you kick us off?
Carry on.
So firstly, what is perfectionism? I think it's something that's common between us, but varies a little bit person to person.
And nice, that's what Ross just said.
There you go. Radical. I think the reason for this is it's like Heisenberg said, it's about the subjective nature of reality, and everything is a vision. It's how you perceive it and how you question it. You know, what we perceive is not what we perceive, but nature exposed to our method of questioning it. So really, if you're considering perfectionism in any way, it's because it's presumably had some sort of negative effect on you. And that's that you need to start with. And like, well, what is the downside? What is it? How is it affecting you? And I find that most people tend to, when you think about perfectionism, you think about a certain type of perfectionism, like, you know, is that time accurate? Is it pitch accurate? You know, is it this? Is it that? Quite lazy and obvious definitions of perfectionism. But if you had to describe, you know, if there was a perfect piece of music and you had to describe what it was that made it perfect, it wouldn't be those things necessarily. There are all the other things that we often trot out in a counter-perfectionist argument, like, you know, feel and vibe and humanity and, you know, things being off-grid and all the rest of it, things that make things, make music sound more human and so on. But for me, I mean, if you're going to do something perfect, it's going to have an element of that in it anyway. You know, it has to have feel. And for me, it's more important than being time accurate if you're playing an instrument, or pitch accurate if you're singing, or whatever, if you're trying to, you know, blend harmonies and so on. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to look at, you know, if you have a perfectionist problem, what is it? Is it the inability to make decisions because of getting embroiled in detail and not seeing the bigger picture? Or is it the fact that you're being a little too narrow about what perfect is, and you're not trying to include other things that are perhaps more important, like, you know, having a feel, having a longer take, something that makes more sense to you? So, yeah. I don't know. For me, initially, it was the sort of second-guessing yourself too much, and not realizing that when you come to question something a huge amount, it's just because you've nearly finished it more than anything else. It's that whole, I'm almost done, is it right thing? You know, whereas at the beginning, you don't care because it's all new, everything's great. When you come to the end, it's like, oh, I'm almost done. Is it, have I messed it up, you know? So second-guessing yourself is one thing, but I've learned over time, and I think some of you guys might have as well, is to embrace a few imperfections in things, to make it more interesting and less robotic, except where you want it to be completely hypnotically regular, and to include sections of music or sways of music that are a bit more human, a little bit more drifty, not quite so precise, but have something in them, something that is harder to define, that gives it a vibe and brings it to life and makes it less repetitive, really. I mean, I think that's if you're making electronic music, you know, you either want to be very repetitive, deliberately so, and that's that's your thing, or you want to make sure that you're not. There's not really a lot of middle ground for it. So I would say, you know, what's your perfectionist problem? Be honest. Yeah. Think about
what's
it.
What's your perfectionist problem?
I was going to say, if you're talking, when you said like, oh, electronic music, this and that, it's like, well, that's production or writing. But what if you're stuck in perfectionism with production, where you just you don't want to release it because you're constantly thinking it needs to the mix needs to be perfect, right? Compared to X, Y, or Z artist or something. So I think, like you're saying, you have to define where your perfection is first.
Yeah.
You have to define that spot, like Ross was saying as well. Like, where am I getting caught in my perfectionism? Like, is it is it in the performance part? Is it in the production part? Is it in the songwriting part, or is it in the release part? Like, is it really just my nerves about releasing this into the world or something? You have to figure out where that is, and then you can start treating or figuring out ways to work around it.
With a view to, like, what best serves the music. You know, if it sounds dirty and messy, but it's absolutely thumping and quite impactful because of that, that's probably a good thing. Don't fight it. Don't kill it stone dead trying to make it tidy. You know, if it's, you know, look for that and bring it out. Don't try and fight against the flow. But yeah, I do think the word, to agree with Ace of Stripe in the chat, I do think the word perfect is a bad one to be bandying around when you're A, trying to be creative, and B, trying to finish music.
Yeah, I always say use impeccable instead of perfect. Get it impeccable, right? But it doesn't have to be perfect. Because, well, we're human, right? No, there's no such thing as perfection in humanity, like in anything we do, right? Yeah. There's always human error and things like that. So when you try to make it perfect, you're actually making it sound weird to our ears, right? That's why if you don't add swing, or if you don't add velocity changes, like if you just put on a DAW a 16th note hi-hat just running, it's just going to sound, you know, the same level. It just sounds weird, like throughout a whole song. But if you put velocity changes throughout it, put some swing, maybe put it off a little bit, there you go. It starts to sound, even electronic music has that. Yeah. Even electronic music will have shuffle, swing, little off time things, or chords that aren't all hit at the same time. Curtis, let's hear your take.
Yeah.
Well, I think that offers a very nice introduction to where this kind of is with this perfectionism, because we often think that perfectionism comes from our own desire to be the best that we can be. And that's fair enough. And that's where it kind of comes from in that regard. I think it's important to also remember that once that music goes out into the world, it becomes a completely different piece of art than what you create for it. And it, like, for example, Moonglade, right? Moonglade, sorry, my favorite track for music for Imagine Landscapes, right? It's there, and it probably means something very different. I hear a very different song to a degree than what you made it at some opera. And it's there's within that, there's that notion of things that you might be sitting there going, I don't know, quite like about it. And there's this me that I've never even considered it to be an imperfection or considered it to be a wrong, because I just don't think the same way that you do. But also,
or you don't hear what, right? You don't hear it.
Exactly.
Like I latch on to a certain thing and go, oh, that bass is too loud, right? But someone else will probably think, because like Ian Lake said, subjective. Bass levels are subjective. All that's subjective.
Getting over perfectionism. I think for me, more recently, I think it has just been about accepting and repetition. I've, especially since I've been doing these weekly live streams where I've got just this backlog of just finished projects, unfinished projects, which I'm slowly kind of caning through. It's just been a case of just, it is what it is. And there are going to be some songs which you really vibe with and think it's really nice. And there are going to be songs that you just finish for the purposes of finishing it. And each one is a moment in time, and you spend a certain amount of time on each one. And each one is a meditation. For me, it's a meditation when I'm trying to process some emotions in that regard. And then I kind of get done with processing those emotions, and then I start processing other things. And I just, not everything has to be this really down in the weeds massive thing. Like,
I like that. And I thought you were gonna say it. That's why I wanted to cue it. You said not everything, and I was like, oh, he's gonna say the thing, and then you didn't. But yes, I like that. It can just be.
It can just be, I think, especially with, like, I've got Into Voidal coming out over this year, right? And they're a collection of tracks which I kind of like, but they're also, you know, is it the same as Maroon for me in terms of stuff? No, but I enjoy what I've done in that regard, you know, like, and I know that it's going to be something else for something else. And it's just this thing, it just is. I mean, I am making music because that's what I was put on this earth to do. And I'm going to do it, and I'm going to keep doing it. And I don't care. It's just going to keep on going. And that's kind of where I'm at in that way. And that's how I get over perfectionism, because even if I'm looking at something and I'm looking at it, I'm going, am I having fun? Am I enjoying this? Is this now becoming a chore? All right, finish it, on to the next. I've got enough perceived monkey chimp knowledge up here to just go, okay, I know how to finish that song. Let's just get on with the next one if it's not serving me anymore. If that makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah,
we'll get that.
Definitely. I know. I get that. I get that. And I think that's what I feel the same. Like I feel similar to Bendu. That was one of my major sticking points for perfectionism, is like feeling like it's not complicated enough. And I just got over, I mean, I was just like, I don't care anymore about this. Like, I don't care if it's at this thing or in this key, or if it's using, you know, this much. I just wanted to let the music speak. Like, that's why I really liked what you said about not everything has to be legendary. It can just be, because I mean, it's like subjectivity. What's legendary for someone won't be for another. It just, there's no point in stressing about it, because music is about expression for me. So I just want to say what, or, you know, say what I'm trying to say and then let it be. And from that point, I then got stuck in the perfectionism of the production. Like, oh, this hi-hat's too loud. I need to change it. I need to fix it. And it's always the hi-hats for me. It's always the hi-hats. But then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to set it at this, put like a limiter on all the drums so I don't have to worry about it, and then move on. And I think the other thing too is just letting it go and getting it out. Like, finishing it, not getting stuck and being like, I'll let it go, and just dropping it. But actually finishing it and putting it out, and just being like, okay, it's out for however many people that want to listen to it, you know, whatever, it's out there. And then just go to the next one, like you said, Curtis, just move on to the next one. I love what Asaph Stripe said, accepting the key of C. By proxy or whatever, would that also be A minor?
It always ends up being A minor if I use C anyway. I can't stop. Yeah.
Eon, like, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, delete the hats if you have to. You know, just get on with it.
You know? Who needs high hats, right?
The thing is, yeah, I mean, do you want to express something? You know, do you want to use that magical aspect of music to feel something, to try and express that through music and have someone else feel something similar or equivalent? Or do you want to express what you're worried people might think of what you're writing? Do you know what I mean? It's just twisted if you think about it. You're just getting in your own way, you know. Shut up. I think that was one of the things that got me to stop, was just that you are getting in your own way. You've done this enough now to know that things happening naturally, and it's almost like the it's like Zen. It's like the not doing of making music. You need to get out of your own way and allow it to happen and help it along its way and finish it. And how successful you are in that varies. And, you know, there's some good ones, some bad ones, you know, and quite a lot in between. But it just is, like Curtis says, they are what they are. They're snapshots in time, you know. They can be what they are, and you don't need to pollute that with what you're worried other people might think of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, inserting yourself into the artistic expression. Like, if your creative expression is the flow of the universe going through you, and you kind of take it from a fact that you're not part of it, you're just a vehicle for that creative expression to extend and put your own ego into it, is almost like a hubris in that regard. It's like, I'm saying something about me through the music. And I suppose there is a section of that, but it also, there's this point of, do you really make the music? If we're talking about the easy music just flows and it's just automatic and just locked in and doing the thing, is that you, or is that some alien that's kind of going, and that kind of, you know what I mean?
It's still being sent through you, right? You still have to learn how to do it, I suppose. I don't know. It's interesting. It depends where your take is too. But I mean, I always feel like when you're in the flow, it's still you speaking.
Yeah, it's this. It's
your emotional. It's your world experience, your lived experience that's speaking through.
I get that.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have to be someone to be no one, right?
You have to be someone to be no one. That is very true in that regard. That is very true. That is Ram Dass for you. That is Ram Dass.
Yeah, I knew you'd know what I was. I wanted to see if you'd catch it. Bendu says, all the kalimbas I looked at on the internet today are in C. So does that then mean that C is the perfect scale?
Like that. I mean, could
now
be.
We're talking perfect forms. Plato would be so proud, right? No, I disagree. That's why samplers exist and DAWs exist. And anything that can change pitch, you could just repitch it and you're good to go.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is good Pat Brady quoting Stephen Hawking. One of the basic rules of the universe is that nothing is perfect. Perfection simply doesn't exist. Without imperfection, neither you nor I would exist.
Exactly.
Love it. Thanks, Pat. That's really good. And Smiling Errors, I think this is something we should talk on the Discord because I want to hear everybody's take, but we're about done. We got to wrap up. But sales might be considered an objective measure. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know that's about that, but I'd love to hear. I'd love to hear. Smiling Ears, I mean, if you're game to talk with the Discord about it and all that, post it in the Discord. I'd love to hear people's takes because
I would say it could be.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it.
It could not be.
It's pretty transient, I think. I think
we can find examples of both. But yeah.
There you go. That's an imperfect answer. Both. It can be both of that.
I'll share this again then, because there it's got to be imperfect, right? Yeah. Mars says no in all caps. I don't know if that's regarding what Pat said, which I doubt, or the
just threads.
Just general comment.
Or just no in general. Just general no. He says no. I don't know. It could be any.
maybe he's trying. He thinks he's on Threads, but he accidentally put in this chat box instead.
He thought he was trolling someone on Threads. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a lot to unpack here. And we've kind of, this is one of those round robins, which we could go round and round and round and share ideas for hours. But sadly, we are coming towards a close for today's show. We can carry this on in Discord and we can always bring it back in a future episode. It's not the first time we've discussed perfectionism. I think we did it back in the Lightspeed back in the day. It's not the first
time. We were a little more practical about it that time. And this time we're a little bit more, existentialist about it, but
yeah. So maybe we need to balance it out a little bit
more, isn't it? But if it wasn't that complicated, would we be doing music in the first place? Probably not.
Exactly,
that's true.
But yes, we'll continue this discussion in the Discord over the next couple of days. I'm sure of it. If you are listening back or if you're watching back, let us know what you think, either in the Discord in the little comments section, which Sam Whopper puts when he uploads this to Spotify. Or just let us know. We'd be really curious because, the chat has been alive. Everyone's got something to say. We'd love to know what you guys listening back have to say as well.
Yeah, I want to continue talking about platonic forms, subjectivity versus objectivity. Looks like Smiling Errors is of the objective point of view. So that's interesting. That's what they were using that to try and point out, it looks like, about that it is objective. I don't know because
it did there.
Yeah, clever. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Yeah,
I feel like we should set up a university and then just the Audio Nautic Academy, and then we just have these seminars for a whole year. That'd be great.
No, I love it. I love talking about this stuff. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm not saying I it doesn't matter. I just, we all have our own perspectives, and I love to talk about this stuff. I generally incline that it's subjective, but I understand people saying it's objective, but I love hearing the different counterpoints, points, arguments, because it's just so fascinating to me, like where we can all land on these thoughts, and like, is there a perfect song? Is there this and that? Like, it's just great to talk about it. And like Lars was saying, if sales are the best indicator of quality, then Taylor Swift is the best musician of all time. Smiling Ear says never mentioned quality. So it just gets interesting. This is fascinating to me to talk about this stuff. And if you agree, disagree, whatever it is, head to the Discord. Let's talk about it. It's good to talk about these things and to hear everyone's viewpoints, and maybe we all learn something, or together we grow.
Yeah,
very much so. We are getting ever closer to that 100th episode. So it's getting exciting. We're getting very close now. I won't be here next week, sadly. I'm away on work, and we have to find out what we're doing. But we're gonna have to be a bit up in the air at the moment. But we're getting close to 100. So if you like what we've done here, consider telling people that we exist. This community is growing, and it's really nice to see. So thank you ever so much for sticking around for an hour and 40 minutes to listen to us drone on. It's great fun.
Yeah, it's always a highlight of the week to hang out with all of you and talk platonic forms.
Yeah.
But talk gear, talk all that. Yeah, I will be going, as we said, to NAMM this weekend. So if there's anything you all want me to look at or try to cover, let me know. I'm still figuring out, like I said, how I'm going to even do like film and all that stuff. But I'm going to at least get some B-roll and then talk over it and things like that. But yeah, let me know if you see anything. Post it in the Discord if there's anything you want covered. I'm trying to figure out the strategy of where I'm going to go and all that. It's my first time going, so I have to like feel it all out. But I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Sure. Ian, like, any last words before we log off for today?
Thank you for listening.
Said in a very radio full way. I love that.
Right up to the mic, too. Yeah, thank you.
Right up.
Smooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. I am going to be doing an update to the Audionautic playlist, as we talked about last week. I have no time this week to do it, but that's coming. I think we'll just do it once a month and just, you know, have it up there. So if you do want to get your music on the Spotify playlist, let me know on the Discord, on my socials. I'll check it out. And if it fits, I'll add it. But yeah, it's growing. It's doing well. But, you know, we were contemplating like Spotify, keep it, don't. But everybody wanted us to keep it, it seemed. So mm-hmm. We'll keep it. We'll keep updating it. And it's there if you want to listen to it. Lots of incredible music on there. So yeah. Anything you want to add, Curtis, before we go?
Just to say thanks again. Thank you ever so much. It's been wonderful to sit back and talk to you. And definitely people should go and listen to Taylor Swift.
Yeah. We should have cut it before that. Jeez. Yeah. All right. Well, with that, we'll leave it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.